What we're dealing with here, littering air, is a complete lack of respect for the law.
And smoke in the reef.
Called the dust pop.
We live in a society of laws.
Dust pop?
Yeah.
No, that's not real.
This thing a weed.
Takes one solid weekend of training to get that bag.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the show. If you are an avid listener, you might have noticed we missed our normal release schedule, and I apologize for that. To say that I have been swamped lately is not doing it justice. I wait for life to slow down someday, and I fear that day will never come until the day that I die. We will see. But thank you all to all of our members for your continued support. And speaking of members, our top tier membership level is called the Fearless, and we've got a few tumblers left for incoming Fearless members. But I owe some shout outs to those who have signed up recently. First, Josh, Tampa, Florida. Thanks, brother, for signing up. Anthony, New Athens, Illinois. Christian, Virginia Beach, Virginia, shout out. Nathan, Invert Grove Heights, Minnesota. What up, Nate? Next, we have Meg from Stevens Point, Wisconsin. Asael, I may be saying that wrong. If I am, I apologize. Rialto, California. Alex from Detroit, Michigan. And Joseph from Santa Barbara, California. Those are our most recent Fearless members. They all have their tumblers in hand. And if you are interested in that, go to Patreon, patreon.com. And you'll get, if you sign up for the top tier membership level, you'll get one of our first 50 exclusive Police Academy podcast tumblers. And of course, there's all kinds of other stuff going on. On Patreon, we are about to do our t-shirt giveaway from The Badge Life. Badge Life t-shirts and apparel. You can go to thebadgelife.com to check out what they have to offer. But as I am overdue on this, I will jump right into the show. This is a letter from an NYPD officer kind of talking about the way that he and his fellow officers are feeling and processing everything that's going on right now. So I will throw in some comments here and there, but for the most part, this is all direct quote from the letter that this officer wrote. All right, here we go. Hello. Due to the obvious climate, I prefer my name not be used. I currently work for NYPD and have a bachelor's in forensic psychology. Now, there are many points I feel are concerning, and my coworkers would agree. Below are bullet points if you do not have time to read the rest of my statement. Now, I'll skip these bullet points, but I transition them down into the headers for each section. So the first one is law enforcement is paramilitary, not civilian. I want to begin by reminding the public that we as a service are paramilitary. This means that we follow closer to the military structure's lifestyle demands than the private sector. We have a chain of command. We have a patrol guide, or policy, which includes rules and regulations along with, as it is stated in its title, our guidelines. The rules and regulations in which we abide by are purposely left vague or gray. This is designed to allow for officers' discretion to deal with each situation on an individual basis. When we, emotional human beings, are dealing with others who are emotional human beings as well, we cannot abide by a strict black and white guideline. A second reason we are closer to the military than we are the civilian sector is that we have the ability to, quote unquote, rob a person of their freedoms. There is and should be no civilian position that holds the power to remove someone's constitutional rights. This fact alone, coupled with the chain of command and rules and regulations in which we abide, separate us from the military, or rather, separate us from the civilian sector. My bad. All right, next section, reallocation of responsibility. I believe Society has forgotten that, like the military, policing is a violent job. This does not mean all we do is conduct violence, but it does mean that violence is a crucial part. When de-escalation and commands do not work, the next step is force. Force is inherently violent. There is no getting around this once verbal commands and verbal judo fail. Society forgets that. And I would add, never knew that in many cases. They, society, because of movies, TV, and politicians, believe that an officer's primary job is community service, and their secondary job is to enforce the laws. This is not the case. Our primary objective is to enforce the laws to keep the public safe. We are not qualified nor trained effectively in social work, emergency medicine, psychology, and or arbitration, which have now become the majority of our calls. Do not defund increased training funds. This is where the argument of defunding the police versus reallocation of responsibilities comes into the discussion. Society has relinquished itself of the responsibility of dealing with neighbors with dignity, respect, and compromise. They assume it is the police's job to play arbitrator for non-emergency police matters. This includes loud music complaints, cars double parked, nonviolent disputes within relationships, and commercial businesses. The public needs to stop calling the police, whose job is to deal with crime and public safety, with societal issues. This is where social workers, domestic violence experts, mental health clinicians, educators, and other industries need to be funded better without interfering with our budgets. Next section, higher salaries mean higher selectability for better quality. Training for officers must be increased. NYPD is only required to qualify for their firearms twice a year. This means an officer can go 363 days a year without training, practicing cleaning, or firing their service weapon. Training does not only include firearms, but physical tactical training, in which we receive zero after the academy, and we are not compensated or allowed to train on job time, which is preposterous. This makes it difficult for officers who work 5 days a week, 8.5 hours a day, before overtime and travel to and from work. Officers can't afford to live in the city in New York City because, well, you'll see what their salaries are for one of the most expensive places to live in America. Officers need better hand-to-hand and combat training so that most situations can be controlled before it leads to deadly force. As I am sure you are aware, there are many videos of tactically unsound approaches to situations. Training, training, training. This cannot be done without proper funding. Better quality officers means better quality situations. If you reduce the funding we receive, the first impact is going to have on salary and overtime. This means quality individuals won't be able to take the job if they cannot support their families. NYPD's current salary scale is $42,000, $45,000, $46,000, $47,000, $51,000, and then $86,000. $1,000 a year. It takes 5.5 years to break $52,000 to live in one of the most expensive areas in the country. We are one of the lowest paid yet largest police forces in New York State, actually second largest in the world to Tokyo. The surrounding counties clear $102,000 a year, upwards of $155,000. Increasing our salary increases the selectability of higher quality officers to fill the ranks rather than lowering the standards to fill them. Next section, systematic versus individual racism. The issue of racism is an issue in law enforcement, but it is not on an individual level. It is the system in which politicians and brass have created. The courts show discrepancies in sentencing regarding similar crimes for different races, higher impact in low-income areas with focuses on petty crimes and summonses than in wealthier areas, the need to produce, although NYPD, thanks to lawsuits, have dialed back on quotas. Bosses cook the books to show that crimes are down by making grand larcenies, which is a felony, into a petty larceny, having Assault 2, which are felonies, be written up as Assault 3. Various examples of cooking the books so brass can be promoted and the mayor and higher-ups can show how well of a job they're doing. Given many of these stem from the fact that district attorneys refuse to prosecute certain crimes and downgrade it, this creates the environment of, why charge them for what it is if they're going to downgrade the charge because they are too, quote-unquote, overwhelmed with cases. Next section, traumatic situations over a career. Society forgets what EMS, fire, and law enforcement go through daily. I have done CPR on adults. I have been on the scene for stillborns being birthed. I have mourned with families for loved ones that have passed. I have held the intestine in a man who was stabbed. I have tended to the wounds of people who were shot. I have helped control a scene of a hit and run who left an elderly man deceased. These are things we pray no person ever sees in their lifetime, but yet we see them on a weekly and sometimes daily basis. People do not realize how much of the world is in danger around them. Constant calls with law enforcement, constant calls for the sick and injured for EMS. If only they understood how much first responders do so that the general public can sleep at night. Next section, protest and volunteer, not riot and loot. Go and protest what you believe is wrong. It is your American right, but don't stop there. Volunteer. I beg those who want to make a difference in the world to become the difference they want to see. Across the states, volunteer agencies are desperate for people. Please volunteer with EMS or fire and see how delicate the world is around you. Many agencies even have auxiliary police positions to volunteer with. Many mental health facilities and drug facilities need assistance. Sincerely, a concerned cop. All right, so that's the end of the letter. I'm going to just jump in on these sections real quick and kind of add a few things or comment on the things that this officer touched on. First, let's talk about law enforcement being paramilitary. Well, cops are more like the military than any other civilian sector job that you'll see. Generally speaking, civilians can't do what cops do. They are not prepared. Yeah, you have the ones and twosies who are have the correct mindset because they've chosen and been intentional about training themselves on their own to be prepared for the things that happen in life every day, that cops see every day, that most of society sticks their head in the sand about. But for the most part, civilians can't do what cops do. And that's because cops go through a, generally speaking, paramilitary training system and work in a paramilitary structure. They have a chain of command. They have a level of discipline that civilians typically don't. Now, that's not always the case on an individual level, but those are the cops that all the other cops hate. Okay, so there is a very big difference. And civilians, as well as cops, need to recognize that because, and this is one of the reasons we started this show, we don't think the same. And understanding that the person you're dealing with is operating with a different set is essentially playing a different game, right? You're sitting across the table from someone trying to play Texas Hold'em, but that person's playing euchre. I mean, it's going to be hard to play that game unless you figure out a way to deal with them in a way that they understand. All right, the next section, reallocation of responsibility. Well, first of all, cops would love the help. We hate going to bullshit neighborhood disputes and noise complaints. Yes, please, please fund an agency that can help when it comes to Sally Sue complaining about her neighbor's dog. Cops want nothing to do with that. Now, that said, I've seen officers get into deadly force incidents. Seen someone get killed because of a noise complaint. Officers got called to the house. Standard procedure. Hey, you know, it's getting late. You guys need to turn the music down, kind of wind it down a little bit. You know, part ways. Neighbor calls back, hey, they're still out there being crazy. They're getting louder. Well, it turns out that the resident there didn't like the fact that their neighbors couldn't handle it like adults, that the police had been called, and it pissed him off. He's also drunk, so he gets louder. Cops, or our officers, show back up and tell him, you know, hey, and I can't remember, I don't know if they wrote him a citation, noise complaint citation or not. Ultimately, that's a small detail in a much more dramatic story in which, as the officers were going to leave the call, the suspect got in his four-wheel drive truck and put it in four-wheel drive, if I remember correctly, and started ramming our cruisers with the officers in and near them. Our officers, having really no other way to stop this threat, of course, used deadly force. They lit this guy up, and he did not survive. That was a noise complaint. So, yes, police officers would love the help from agencies that are designed to handle social work issues, but finding that line is also going to be very difficult because many of the situations in which police officers are called that aren't criminal situations, whether it's someone that's thinking about suicide, noise complaints, anything where there's alcohol, drugs, mental instability, and or conflict, there's a real potential that those things could become violent very quickly. And it's going to be very hard to find social workers willing to step into those situations without a real cop there. All right, systematic versus individual racism. There are individuals in law enforcement that are racist. There always will be, because human beings always find a way to screw it up. But they are not accepted in modern law enforcement culture. This isn't like a normal thing. It's not okay to be a racist in our law enforcement culture as a whole. Cops themselves are simply doing the job the way that they're being told by, you know, the way they're trained at the academy, the way that they're trained in field training, by the pervasive use of force best practices throughout the law enforcement community. And of course, we can't leave out their own department's policies and the laws guiding police behavior. Now, much of the conversation today is about discrepancies, right, in the data. Well, first of all, discrepancy does not equal discrimination. It can be a sign of it, but it is not, there's a difference, therefore, the system is racist. It doesn't work that way because people are different, and sometimes those differences do fall along racial lines. But if there are large discrepancies and we're worried that they are being created by some sort of prejudice or racism, it's likely due to reporting or guidance from higher management on enforcement activities. It's coming from what this officer is pointing out as far as like how this is systematic, right? It is the department saying you must enforce these petty minor crimes in these lower income areas, which is going to dramatically increase officer interaction with people, which inherently will increase the use of force, because the more interaction you have, the more likely that some of those interactions are going to end poorly. Those are driven from an agency level perspective, not an individual officer perspective. If you haven't been a police officer, it's hard to really put yourself to really like grasp this, but you have to realize that the what of what police officers do on a daily basis is dramatically dictated by their department. From the top down, their boss is saying, hey, I want you to go after this type of crime. This is our focus right now. This is what the patrol captain wants. This is what the chief wants, whatever it is, right? Whoever is driving the ship at that moment wants this thing, and this is our focus. And the officers typically you're always going to have those guys who kind of do their own thing and they pay the price for it typically. But officers are going to cater their day-to-day actions based on that overall agency direction and culture. So if you want to change that, then you need to look at those higher levels in the agency. All right, traumatic situations over a career. And we'll come back to the systematic racism kind of thing here in a second. But traumatic situations over career, how many cops have PTSD? Well, this is a non-scientific response, but I am confident in saying that there's a shit ton. Now, signs of it include massive suicide, alcoholism, divorce, and domestic violence rates relative to the regular population. Police officers are no different than our military service members who deal with trauma, and they pay the cognitive price for that later on, except it is police officers, for some reason, are not treated the same way that our soldiers and military warfighters are. Somehow we have forgotten that what police officers do every day is combat, right? Like the trauma that your brain has to process as a police officer. It's a different context, but the end result is the same, if not extremely similar. PTSD is a serious issue in law enforcement and is kind of flying under the radar right now, at least it seems. Protest and volunteer, not riot and loot. I mean, the justification for the rioting and protest or and looting is just sickening. And this is what happens when we lose the culture war. Personal accountability is not even a consideration anymore because the culture has shifted so much because we have allowed it to, that you can always point the finger at somebody else. It's never your fault. And I think we're in a dangerous place. On one side of the political spectrum or world, we have people saying that there's specific groups of people in our country that cannot make it on their own because they're being oppressed. And of course, the media, mainstream media, by and large, does support this. That narrative, as well as, you know, this idea that blacks are being hunted down in the streets by the police. Well, neither of those claims are supported factually. But this is why we now have in the conversation this idea of pervasive and systemic racism. Because when the facts don't support your pulling out the racism card, the way around that is to make a claim that cannot be disputed by fact and or logic. So when you create something so vague and undefinable, so unidentifiable as pervasive and systemic racism, it can't be refuted. And this is why I pointed out earlier that discrepancy does not equal discrimination. But the pervasive and systemic racism people will say it is, because that's the crutch that they lean on to try to convince you that this thing that they can't define and that you cannot refute is real. Well, look at this difference in outcomes. That is the smoke from the fire that is racism somewhere in the system. That's the argument. But there's so many gaps in the actual logic there that it falls flat on its face if you're paying attention. Now, this allows gullible and ignorant people to believe in it. You know, it might seem harsh, but it's just simply the truth. Because people who are susceptible to these claims, who want to blame someone else, who don't want to take personal accountability, or who just want to atone for example, their white privilege, right? They've succumbed to the wokeness of our culture. They're drinking that Kool-Aid. And they want a way to prove that they're not racist, are going to bite on these arguments because they have no way of disproving them. And if they don't agree with them, then they are cast out as a racist, right? So the pervasive and systemic racism claim does not allow intellectually honest people to adequately refute it. All you can do is basically what I just did and say, listen, this is a thing that you cannot define, and therefore it cannot be proven to be true or false. But the people who talk about it just talk about it as if it's already proven and assumed to be true, to be a real and actual thing. It's tiger insurance. It's all it is. Tiger insurance is like this idea that, you know, you can buy tiger insurance and say that because you have tiger insurance, you've never been attacked and eaten by a tiger. If you're gullible enough to believe that, fine, keep paying that bill. But the reality is, I've never been attacked or eaten by a tiger. I've never seen a tiger in the wild, and I don't have tiger insurance. Well, just like I don't have tiger insurance, I don't believe in this pervasive and systemic racism ideology. That doesn't mean that I don't believe that there are things that we can do better in our institutions in America. It doesn't mean that I don't think that there are racists in America. There absolutely are. But the pervasive and systemic racism argument is not one based in fact, not one grounded enough to even have a discussion about. It is intentionally vague so that you cannot disprove it, because on the facts, the argument that our issues in law enforcement are being driven by race today just don't hold up. Now, our republic was designed to ward off factions, mobs of people dictating the way the rest of us should live and behave. Mobs are emotional and irrational, and they gain a momentum of their own. Unfortunately, we're starting to see the mob rule by swaying public policy through the threat of violence and by politicians just falling in line with a very radical ideology. And this is not where this was intended to go, but it kind of all leads to this. Election day is coming. And I you all know that I'm not going to tell you what to do or what to think. I'm going to give you information and a way of thinking about things. I believe in teaching people how to think, not what to think. But election day is coming. And if you don't vote or haven't voted in the past, quite frankly, you shouldn't be protesting anything or even speaking at all on these issues, because your voice in a democratic republic, your number one primary voice is your vote. I understand that's not your only voice. You do have, it is absolutely American to voice your opinions in the public realm. Free speech is a thing that we have that doesn't exist like it does here anywhere else in the world. But if you're not voting, you kind of should probably shut your mouth. Secondly, if you vote and continue to vote the party line, regardless of results, facts, and evidence that suggests that maybe you should be voting the other way, you're an idiot. Don't vote on emotion and hearsay. Vote based on past results of the people you're voting for. Look at what they actually do. Because let's be honest. Doesn't matter what political party you affiliate with, or if you don't affiliate with either of the main parties, kind of where you land on the spectrum. Most of the politicians out there are worse than car salesmen and lawyers all put together in one. I mean, you can't believe a single word that comes out of their mouth. They are not telling you the truth. They are not truthers, most of them. They are there for their own personal gain, is the sad reality of it, for the most part these days. And this has been made extremely clear by their actions. So I would encourage all of you to stop looking at or stop listening to what they're saying and start looking at what they're doing. It requires more work, more research. I understand that, but it is our, in my opinion, our duty as good Americans. And if we want to continue on with this great experiment, we have to make good decisions when it comes time to pull the lever for whoever we happen to be voting for. So just encouraging you all to get out to the polls. I don't care who you vote for. I just care that you go about it with some seriousness, because our country is in serious trouble right now. And removing emotion as much as you can. Really sit down and question your own, whether your beliefs, the things that you instinctually feel when it comes to politics and you know, American government and everything, are based on actual facts and evidence or just the way you feel and what you've been told and what feels right. Because a lot of the time, what feels right is not based on any sort of reality at all. And to bring it all back around to this original letter from this NYPD officer, the reason I read these things is because for the public to hear from our actual officers, their own honest, confidential words about what's going on right now, gives you, if you're a civilian, it gives you a much better idea of what the issues actually are and what's going on in our law enforcement system today. You're not going to get that from the mainstream media. So I'm glad that you're all here. We've got several more responses from active duty law enforcement officers sharing their thoughts on all that is going on in our country right now regarding race in policing. So stay tuned for those. Thank you for listening. Thank you for becoming a more informed citizen and for looking for truth. Because that is what mature adults do, and it's what we must do as a country to continue on toward future greatness. All right, that is a wrap for this one. Ladies and gents, thank you again for tuning in. To our members, I'm working on a bunch of stuff behind the scenes that hopefully I'll get out to you soon. We've also got gear set up, videos hopefully coming soon from some of our law enforcement listeners and members, because I don't have an active setup as far as my vest goes. What I have right now would not be representative or helpful for those who are getting into law enforcement and want, you know, tips and tricks and advice on how to set up their vest. I don't have a good example right now, so we're working on getting some videos from our officers who listen to the show and who are members of the program to kind of chime in on that topic. So stay tuned for that. If you are a member, our middle and top tiers have access to behind the scenes and exclusive video content. And of course, even our lowest membership level has access to our chat server and our the Badge Life t-shirt giveaway, which is happening very soon. So go check it out at Patreon. If you're not a member already, at patreon.com, patreon.com. Don't forget to go out and vote and be an informed, intellectually honest voter this time around, if you haven't in the past. And just want to let you all know, regardless of what you vote for, who you vote for, and what you believe, that we love you and we hope the best for you and for yours. We'll see you all next time. As always, do good, be strong, stay free.